This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. In the first segment of our new series, we've got some listener questions to mull over while the football takes a break. Grab yourself a hot or cold or even alcoholic beverage of your choice and join us in our new look Coffee Corner. It's Wednesday the 20th of March. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm Joe Butterfield.
And I'm Ollie Kerr.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
It's here for Gundogan. It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. And now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
Welcome to the Coffee Corner, a new series here at the City Report Podcast, the place where all of our listeners' questions will be answered, football and non-football related. Joe, you're indifferent to hot drinks, aren't you? Which is truly bonkers. So you're not too welcome in our new Coffee Corner, but we'll have you anyway.
I'm a hot chocolate man. I'm like a child. That's as far as I go with hot drinks. Tea and coffee, it's just flavor for me. Like, I don't particularly like the flavor of either of them. So yeah, I'll be in hot chocolate corner over here while you two are having an adult conversation.
Grow up.
Well, you say that. Ollie, you brought an actual glass of wine to proceedings. So we've not actually got any coffee orders. It's too late for me. I only drink caffeine after 5 o'clock. So good start.
It is a bit late for coffee, isn't it? We're recording at what time are we? Just coming up to
half seven UK time.
Yeah, so a nice glass of red wine for me today. But I'll drink pretty much anything as long as it's not Jaeger.
Is that how they got the scene from Saltburn?
Which one's that? Oh. Wait, which?
It took a while then.
I have a bad story about Jaeger and experience with it, but that's for another podcast, maybe.
Same.
Yeah, we've probably strayed off the vibe.
I feel like everyone starts off liking Jaegermeister, but once you have a bad experience with Jaegermeister, it's PTSD land and you put off it for life. You are either
absolutely
pre-Jaeger incident or post-Jaeger incident. There's no in between.
That's fair enough. I'm similar. But we have immediately strayed off vibe. This is meant to be, you know, a very cultured, very intellectual coffee corner. But instead, no, we're just chucking up over Jaeger, which I think most people have been there. Okay, so the premise of this new series, we are kind of reinventing the wheel. It is listener question based, but sort of just delving into the topics that maybe aren't as time sensitive in the world of City Report Podcast and City in general. We'll get straight into it then, chaps. And we've got this question from Kevin. It reads as follows. Now that Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp cannot meet each other in English football again, how will the pair's legacy be remembered? In 5 years' time, will Klopp be considered an equal to Pep, or will the City manager be deemed head and shoulders above his counterpart, who fills the vacuum post-Klopp and Pep. Joe, there's quite a few sort of ways we can approach this one. Let's begin with that sort of, how I would describe it, closing arguments, I guess, on the Pep v Klopp era, because, you know, it's going on in the background. Klopp could add another Premier League title. Pep Guardiola could add another Premier League title. For the first time since the two of them really got in the league and got successful, somebody else could break that City-Liverpool quote-unquote era. I'm sure we'll discuss that. But yeah, that's it for them too, anyway, in terms of games against each other.
Yeah, it's going to be, when people look back on Pep's time at City or vice versa with Klopp, this is going to be the rivalry that's going to be spoken about, like, on a managerial level. It's like it's the Fergie Wenger kind of ongoing thing that's been there throughout the whole of both of their times at the club. Obviously, Fergie had like other ones, like, you know, Mourinho, Benitez, etc. But they were all just like fleeting
his
things
own players
in his time
at times.
There. Yeah, yeah. I think, but with Pep, like, Klopp has been like the constant as well, especially seeing as he followed him. Well, no, as in like the rivalry followed on from Dortmund and Bayern as well. So yeah, it's always going to be. When I think of Pep's time at City, I am always going to think of Klopp being at Liverpool as well, because it's part, like, all the best games, like all the most entertaining games, most of them have been between these two teams, and because it's been between these two managers. How I will think of it is Pep wiped the floor with him, as shown by the trophy hauls of both managers. Klopp, obviously a very talented manager in his own way, shown by the fact that he got a Champions League out of that Liverpool team, and obviously to get to another final as well the year before, another final a couple of years later as well. So he's got to three Champions League finals with Liverpool. Like, that is impressive. However, when it came to actual, you know, beating Pep Guardiola's Manchester City to a trophy, I think Ollie McCool put in the chat earlier when talking about this. He's an underachieving, angry, ugly bellend whose biggest achievement is beating City to a league title once, when they had Otamendi and Fernandinho at centre half. Now, I think
reserved from McCool there.
So we don't have to be abusive to Jurgen Klopp, but we will be. However, I think there is some element, and obviously, like, Liverpool fans will caveat a lot of the times that we beat them to a title as well, but their only title win did come when we sold when Vincent Kompany left and we didn't replace him, to put it bluntly. We had Eric Garcia, Otamendi and Fernandinho playing centre-back all the way through the season, and two of the, like, one wasn't a centre-back, one was an 18-year-old kid who we worked out after a few games had the pace and turning circle of Demichelis. And the other is Otamendi, who was great for a couple of seasons, but ultimately is Nicolas Otamendi. So,
but we're still the best centre half in that sort of trio quartet.
We will think of it that way. I'm sure Ollie will have some words to say on how the wider footballing world will see it, and how that maybe doesn't necessarily coincide with reality. But I'm just personally, on a personal level, I'm just glad it's over. I hate days. People hate derby days. I hate games against Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool just as much. Mm. So I'm very much glad to see the back of him.
Ollie, do you think, because you look at the stats, and Joe's right, trophy haul wise, it's been Guardiola's era. But I do take exceptions sometimes when people say, oh, it's not a Pep versus Klopp era, because I think, you know, as Joe perfectly put there, the two of them have been there. And I've said it before and I'll say it again, you can have a Pep v Klopp era. One of them can be better than the other. I think that's fair. But do you think it's almost a bit cartoonish in a way, the way it's been set up, and you've had Pep as, I know some narratives will say no, but the good guy in this cartoon sense, and Klopp's been that baddie who sort of sometimes get the better of him, but ultimately at the end of the day is always defeated. Is that a fair way to sum it up, or are we doing either manager there a disservice?
I think that's fair. We've lost battles, but we haven't lost the war. That's the top of it. I think Joe, to be honest, Joe's nailed it with much of what he's said. The legacy that Klopp has with regards to Pep and City's dominance is that he was the only manager that stopped us winning the Premier League six times in a row. We've won five of the last six, right?
If we won this year, then
No. We've won our last three. Liverpool.
Yeah,
So it could be seven in a row.
Yeah,
Jesus.
So Klopp is the only one, and Liverpool fans need to think about that, right? If his legacy has been...
Are you asking Liverpool fans to think? Well,
your words are not mine. But, you know, that's it. And, Joe, I think you make a good point with regards to Ferguson and Wenger as well, right? Wenger is still regarded as one of the greats. Jose Mourinho is still regarded as one of the greats. That doesn't put them up there with Ferguson, because ultimately, despite having lost a couple of titles to those managers in his time, he was still the man, ultimately. He was the one that came out back on top, rebuilt his team, came out on top again. Pep's been very, very similar. Ultimately, you can't, regardless of what defensive issues we had in that off-season when Liverpool won it, you can't realistically expect a team to go and win six in a row. That's crazy. So again, Klopp's legacy is that he's the one that took that title that year that we had an off-season. But look, Klopp will also go down as one of the greats. He will go down in that bracket of Wenger and Mourinho. I think that's that one little step below, right? Then you've got the real debate, which is Fergie and Pep. Personally, I don't think it's a debate. I'm not going to have that one here, but I think they're another bracket. And you think about another two greats, right? Ronaldo and Messi, for example. I think this is comparable. The only people that think Ronaldo was better than Messi are Madrid fans, Man United fans, and the Portuguese. Everyone else in world football knows the deal here. And I think that's, in 5 years' time when we look back and the wider football world looks back, I think that's a similar way in which we'll see it. It is not disrespectful to Klopp. This is the other problem. Liverpool fans see Pep being rated above Klopp as a disrespect to Klopp. It's not. But Pep has transformed not only City, not only the face of the Premier League during his time here, but the face of English football. Right, we have goalkeepers and centre halves now in youth academies across the country learning how to play out the back. We've got kids learning tiki-taka football, right? Back when I was learning to play, I mean, I say learning, I didn't learn much, I was shite, but it was, you know, it was turn and face, keeper hoof it out, win the first ball, win the second ball. It was as Fabian Delph says, the basics. Pep has completely transformed that. His legacy is bigger than just the results he's achieved with City on the pitch. And again, I don't think Klopp has had that same impact. People talk about playing like City, not like Liverpool, or teaching kids how to play like City centre-halves, not like Liverpool centre-halves. There is just that level between them that ultimately I think will, in a few years' time, be looked back upon. And the reasonable football fans will say, cracking era, two belting managers, but one of them was just that bit better. And I say that bit better, that's four or five Premier League titles better, depending on the rest of this season. So again, Liverpool fans, it's not insulting, it's not demeaning on Klopp's time or his achievements or what he's done. He's rebuilt the team from the mess that he inherited to perennial challengers, but not perennial winners. That's the difference.
Yeah. I asked for closing arguments, and I think that does a decent enough job. And maybe that narrative shifts a little bit if Liverpool go on and win a second Premier League title in this era, and it makes it look a little bit better. But I don't think it's going to stop it from being remembered as a City dynasty. And I guess, Joe, the question here is to follow up on the original question itself, but where does it go now? And I think if we're being hypothetical and we look back on it in 5 years' time, Guardiola left maybe one or two seasons from now. His contract's up at the end of next year. You know, he's flirted with the possibility of maybe extending it again. But should another team come through and sort of take up that vacuum from Liverpool, let's say maybe Mikel Arteta's Arsenal, because they've got the age, they're just about garnering the experience. A Premier League title win, for me anyway, this season could potentially set them up to be the next team to go on and win, I don't know, two from the next five or something like that, depending on how it falls and depending on what Pep Guardiola does.
Yeah, Arteta is the obvious standout as things currently stand to sort of take it on. I think, obviously, Liverpool are very much hoping that Xabi Alonso will be in charge of them next season. That could maybe become another thing as well. But obviously, Liverpool have still got their own squad issues to sort out. Van Dijk has been very non-committal about the idea of staying. Salah has had Saudi Arabia after him for quite a while and is similarly quite non-committal about his future. So maybe they're just in for a, maybe their Klopp era ends and they're just in for a massive downturn. But in terms of like the setup for the next 2 to 3, 4 years, you know, it is obviously Arsenal, because like you say, the age profile of that squad, let's be honest, the money they're spending, like they should be absolutely in a position where they are competing with us at this point, like given their transfer spend in the last four or five years, like in the run up to this. Arteta in particular has accelerated that massively, because like we did when Pep joined, like you need a certain caliber and style of player to do what he wants them to do, and they're certainly putting that squad together. Give them a striker next season, and whether they win the league this year or not, they could be a serious, you know, a serious contender. I would still back us in a two-horse race to beat them, especially seeing as this looks like, if we don't win the league this year, it's easy for us to look at this year as like a bit of a blip in the way that it was when Liverpool won it the last time, because you know there's been a midfield rebuild going on.
I just think it's remarkable City is still in the race, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, and that just shows how good Pep and these players are. That even with it being all still kind of in transitional limbo, that we're still even in the discussion. But yeah, if we're looking to the future, I think Arteta and is sort of the next guy. The Arteta needle is starting to already emerge a little bit. I think we're seeing, you know, with the, I think was it last season where De Bruyne just like shoved him when he was on the touchline with the, like trying to hold the ball away from him, and just and it's like, yeah, I feel like that is sort of beginning to happen. Arsenal fans obviously hate us for numerous reasons, going back to Emmanuel Adebayor and such. Like, they don't like us anyway very much, and I think given the nature of their fan base, the feeling is probably quite mutual amongst City fans as well. I just think the rivalry is very much, as is always the case when two teams ultimately become competitive rivals, the rivalry just follows it. And I think there's every chance that if Liverpool have a drop off when Klopp goes, which is realistically quite likely, if Arsenal are on the upward trajectory while others are going down, we could find ourselves back in another two horse title race with them next season, maybe for the next 2 or 3 years, unless Arsenal have some kind of implosion where they have to sell multiple big name players. But yeah, Arsenal for me.
Amos, are you fancy Man United under Gareth Southgate?
bluntly, no. And look, I've actually made a habit, and I'm sure it'll carry on into the summer, of not backing Gareth Southgate, but saying to view Gareth Southgate's England career, tenure, whatever you want to dub it, in the same lens as club football is a bit foolish, because you get a chance to win a trophy once every 2 years, whereas, you know, Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp, whoever in club football, you get multiple chances every single year. But that the guy just isn't cut out for club football. And it's weird. From a personal level, I wouldn't want to see Southgate sort of castigated by the media, United fans, you know, the usual United treatment when it comes to managers. But it would be hilarious at the same time, wouldn't it, Ollie, if Gareth Southgate is the guy to go in after Erik ten Hag. And I think just on the wider question, we're speaking about the power vacuum post-Klopp, possibly post-Pep, depending on when he decides to leave. And if it's in an 18-month circle around the Klopp news, then you could look at Arsenal going on and sort of maybe taking a stranglehold of the league, just given the way they're currently set up.
Potentially. To be honest, I'm not sure I'm in a place to comment on this, because I'll have a bit of shame here. At the beginning of the season, I predicted that City wouldn't have any real challenges for the title. I thought, because Arsenal last season were running ahead of their numbers so often and so consistently, that they would naturally have that drop off. They've raised their levels, credit to them. I didn't think Liverpool had strengthened anywhere near enough, and I wrote them off. And again, for anyone,
they had a whole midfield to rebuild, didn't they?
Yeah.
So it was like you could look at it and just go, brand new midfield, that's not going to work out first season. And
it's kind of been an amalgamation, though, hasn't it, of these different forces at different points in the trajectory. Obviously, City on the back of a treble in that transition season, Arsenal just about coming through, Liverpool almost harnessing the last dance, so to speak. Hopefully it doesn't end in the sort of silverware. But I think had any of these three teams, obviously we don't know what Arsenal's peak will be. That could be to come. It could have already came. I don't know. But I think if City or Liverpool in any of their previous seasons probably have the league one.
Yeah, well, this is it. It's partly because of our inconsistency, our own inconsistency. Mm. If we were playing to the levels that we should expect of City and that we've become accustomed to over the last few seasons, Liverpool and Arsenal, frankly, wouldn't be near us. We're saying we can't believe we're even still in the conversation. We're still in the conversation partly because they haven't been as consistent as the title winner usually would be. So it's a mix of these things. But again, for anyone that's hurt by my Klopp comments earlier, that's credit to him. You know, it's against the odds, you might say, Liverpool are there and they look like they might go to the wire with City and Arsenal. So in terms of the power vacuum afterwards, oh, God knows. I do think that City are in the best position of any of the top Premier League clubs to maintain some level of continuity post-Pep. You look at the state United were in after Fergie, what we're anticipating Liverpool to struggle with after Klopp. Just because we are such a well-oiled machine and we know how well the club is run in the background and in the upper echelons of the club, that we've probably already got a replacement for whenever Pep decides to go. We'll have somebody lined up, I would imagine, or at least we're close to identifying that person. We'll probably have players on a shortlist ready to come in. You know, we will have a seamless transition, I'm sure, but it will still naturally come down a level in quality and consistency because they ain't Pep, whoever's coming in. So it's hard to say. But yes, I would agree that Arsenal are in the best place to capitalise on that because it might take Liverpool. Liverpool might have a 2-3 year turnaround. United, who the fuck knows? And City might have a short 1 or 2 year drop off as well, albeit a small one. So Arsenal with Arteta in with a team and squad that he's built, they're certainly in the best position to win a title and pick up another couple of trophies if City have a down period, but I have no doubt that we will be back to, you know, at least close to these standards, but never quite there because there is no other Pep.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to wrap it up. Listeners, that's it for part one. Join us after this short break as we continue the City Report podcast Coffee Corner.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to the Coffee Corner. Ciao, Gruscott, howdy, wherever your Coffee Corner is in the world. Obviously a brand new series here at the City Report podcast where we answer your listener questions. Topic number two on the coffee table then, and it's a question from your namesake, Mr. Kirsch, Oliver. They want to know if City winning the treble again this season might end up devaluing the trio of trophies City lifted last season. By winning back-to-back trebles, will it now be considered as the great achievement we know/think it to be, or is there a danger of it being seen as somewhat trivial? Joe, I'll throw that one to you because it's certainly an interesting question, and I never thought, even during the success, that we'd be having a conversation of is winning back-to-back trebles a bad thing? And I don't think, you know, we can say that immediately. No, it's not a bad thing, but it does pose the question, doesn't it, that if City went on and did that achievement again, suddenly maybe last year's achievement has the shine taken off it a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, there's obviously no world where winning back-to-back trebles for us is not the greatest thing that could ever possibly happen. Like, it's going to be, if we do that for us, it's going to be unreal. However, I do think in the sort of the wider footballing fan world that that the two sort of the idea of us doing it back to back makes it seem less special. I think the reason why, because I was thinking before, you know, the idea that Liverpool were in their season where they won the league, they were a few, or was it, or might have even been 2021, I think, but there was a season where they were like three or four games away from winning a quadruple. And ultimately ended up with just one trophy, I think it was or maybe two.
It was less.
Yeah.
It was like a game and a half, obviously City Villa, and then the Champions League final against Real Madrid.
And because we've ended up in like the FA Cup semi-final like every year for the last like three or four years or something, and the Champions League semi-finals most of those times, and also in a title race that we're usually winning at that point, like we've been in multiple chances to win a treble before this, like... The idea of a team having a treble on the cards in the last month or two, certainly in the Pep Klopp time, is not unheard of. Mm. But actually getting across the line and doing it is a generational, like once in a lifetime kind of thing. Like, well, it's not once in a lifetime, you know what I mean? Like once a generation thing. Like United did it in 99. Now we've got people who will only ever know the City treble. Like in 15, 20, 30 years time, we might know someone who only know the next team's treble. Like that's sort of, I like that idea of the treble being something that is so almost completely unattainable that it becomes like a special team that wins it. And you could argue that obviously doing it twice in a row makes this special team even more special, but it does make the treble itself slightly less special if a team just goes and just blows two back to back out of the water. Like that's just that. It's like Madrid winning the Champions League three in a row in it. Like on the one hand, it's insane, but on the other hand, it's a bit like, oh right, well, of course Madrid won it again. Like boring. Yeah. Like yeah, I think it's just one of them where I like the uniqueness and like the one off nature of a treble being what it is. So I can understand why the wider footballing world, who aren't particularly inclined to give City the most credit anyway, would look at it and go, "Well, of course, this Pep Guardiola money fueled state owned Manchester City have won two trebles back to back." Like that would be the narrative ultimately. But I obviously it'd be mint if it happened anyway, wouldn't it?
That's the narrative anyway, right? That's the narrative about the treble anyway. That United did it organically and City's was it's a load of shit. The only thing that devalues an achievement is if another team goes and does it and does it better, right? Centurions. Liverpool finished on 99 points when they won the league.
98.
No, they finished.
Oh, was it 99? They did 99. Yeah,
yeah. So yeah, they got 97. Yeah.
It was ironically Mikel Arteta's Arsenal that stopped him from being able to outdo City's 100 points.
What we were worried about as City fans was that it would devalue our Centurions' achievement because they would have done it as well. We've devalued United's treble because A, we've done it and we've done it bigger. We've done it better. We've done it bigger and we've done it better because A, we won the league by a bigger margin with more points. B, we beat them in the FA Cup final. They had the chance to stop us devaluing their achievement. They folded after 13 seconds. And the Champions League final, we had almost the hardest route possible. Probably was the hardest route possible between Bayern quarters, Real Madrid semis, and a very much in form Inter Milan in the final. Mm. We did it bigger, we did it better. We then followed it up with the Super Cup, which United didn't win, and we followed it up with the Club World Cup, which United didn't win. So the only thing that, if we do a double treble, the only thing that will devalue is our original treble. But if we're the ones devaluing it with an even bigger, better achievement, I'm fine with that. And I'm almost 110% confident that it will not be replicated in our lifetimes.
What, the double treble?
Correct. Yeah. The only thing that devalues a treble is a double treble. The only thing that devalues a double treble is somebody doing it again. So if we do it, massive fucking if right now, but if we do it, it's not devalued by anything except another club in 5, 10, 15 years doing it again. Will that happen? Extremely unlikely. We're 130 odd years into English football and nobody's come close to a double treble. That's where I stand.
It does make sense. And I think we have to be careful of not taking too much for granted in this period of City, because we've just had a whole segment on what Premier League football, what English football might look like after Pep Guardiola leaves. And let me tell you, it's very unlikely we'll get close to winning a treble after Pep. We might win a Champions League. In fact, I reckon we probably will win a couple of Champions Leagues. We'll win a Premier League or two along the way. There'll be plenty of, you know, League Cups, FA Cups. But to have that all in one season come together and work like it did last year was truly special. I actually don't think City will get close to winning the treble again this year. Potentially, maybe they do, maybe they harness some form of sort of winning.
You've never been one for optimism, Mr. Murphy.
Look, there's optimism and there's rationale. And I think this season, I know there was bumpy parts last year, but we'd seen the seeds by now. Yeah. Up until this international break last year of, oh my God, this team's capable. There is that lingering a doubt. I don't think last season's team at that point in the season go to Anfield and collapse under that much pressure as they did. I think they find a way to maybe just see out the draw comfortably. Obviously, it was far from comfortable. But look, it might happen. And we've seen so often now, seasons are defined in this post-March international break era. You've just got to be there. And at the moment, I guess City are there. The question, though, will it devalue it? That's probably for history to sort of look back on and see. And it depends what City then go and do after that. Do they win a treble? And does it then start to maybe look like a bit of a gimmick? I don't know. But look, if it's going to happen, then yes, please. We'll take it all. We've got one more question then to answer before we get out of this. New look CRP Bistro, and it's come from Diane. Shout out to Diane. Diane is a City fan from the United States, and she wants to know what City's growth could look like in the States over the next year or so. Will City ever be able to eclipse the might of Manchester United, Liverpool and Arsenal from a sort of commercial point of view? Now, I think probably for the first episode in a while, there is no actual Americans on the panel, which is frustrating because we'd have had a better insight for that question. But I'm sure we can discuss it and we can hypothesise. Joe, I think to sort of look at it, obviously it comes on the back of City announcing their US tour to, obviously the US in the summer in pre-season. They'll be playing, I think it's AC Milan, Barcelona, Celtic, which is a weird one. And there's another team in there as well. Can't quite remember, but also on the back of that Netflix documentary, which I don't think we've spoken about on this show, at least in the build up to it. I'm sure we'll do plenty when it's released, but I have a theory that this could be a massive couple of months for City in terms of growth. And to throw it into the current, win a Champions League, win a Premier League as well, we could see a big, big boom in terms of City's sort of global appeal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's it's with global fan bases, and it's really obviously difficult to generalize this while we're part of a podcast that has plenty of American contributors but I think realistically, your average sort of global fan is attracted by success. Like, it's as simple as that. Like, there's a reason why Real Madrid and Manchester United and Barcelona are three of the most supported football clubs in the world. And it's because people are attracted to the team that wins stuff. Like, as a casual watcher, maybe every now and then of basketball, I like Golden State Warriors because I like watching Steph Curry throw three-pointers for fun. Like, if I was a neutral, casual observer of football, I would watch Lionel Messi do whatever the fuck it is that he does and however he does it, and be like, that's the reason why I like football and to a degree. So I get and winning the treble is one of the biggest things that, you know, winning this thing that only one club in English football has ever done before, like that gets the eyes of the world on you. That gets like a lot of foreign fans invested in you. So that in itself will have, you know, a big impact in not just America specifically, but the whole world. Obviously, we've got a lot of marketability in there. Like, we've got Erling Haaland, who's like on the cover of FIFA and stuff like that. Like, that's things like that are massive. And obviously having like the best players in FIFA and stuff with, like, you know, De Bruyne, Haaland as well, like, you know, players, things like that seem really silly to us, but they're massive for kids and stuff who grow up like wanting to, you know, playing these games and basing most of their football knowledge off these games and how much they enjoy playing with these players and stuff like that.
It's all right, you can speak about Ollie. He is here.
it's FIFA is always like, it seems like to a lot of people, video games will seem like a really mad way for clubs to like get new fans, but it's one of the most effective ways to do it. So I think, yeah, when you combine all that with a tour in America, I think did we tour America last year as well? Was it the year before? Because we've done it very recently.
No, last year was the this season. Last year was the in Asia,
Japan one.
Yeah. It was a couple of years ago.
It was America before that.
And South Korea was this season. Sorry, and then it was America before it. Which I actually wanted to pick up on that. And I'll open it up to you, Ollie, just quickly, because I'm aware we are running out of time. But I think it was either Sam Lee or Andrew Detmer or John Ashley, maybe the three of them. What a holy trinity that is, by the way. Who basically said in, I think it was 2017, when City toured the States for the first time under Pep, they went to games and they were not really sold out. This could be completely wrong, but I'm just remembering it, sort of how I think I remember it anyway. But he said games weren't really sold out. I think City played United there. It might have been Phil Foden's first appearance in the senior team. And, you know, City were just this sort of team. Maybe it was a bit further on, but you get the point. Whereas the last time they went, when Haaland had just arrived, so it would have been 2022, it was like City shirts everywhere. Everyone had Haaland on the back of the jersey, you know. It completely blown up. And I think this is possibly a chance now for City with the Netflix documentary. And I genuinely don't think it could be understated enough, sort of how mega that is. We are tapping into a market that doesn't exist to most sports clubs. It's going to go boom.
Yeah, heroes. There's two key words here for a club to grow in popularity, especially internationally. Kids and heroes. Heroes like Erling Haaland on the cover of FIFA, massive exposure across Scandinavia, massive global exposure, to be honest, a beast of a man, extremely marketable goal scorer, important. Goal scorers and strikers are always the ones that get the most attention. In a fair and just world, Ruben Dias would be on the cover of every magazine in every country on the planet, but he's not. It's always the goal scorers. And the other thing is, as Joe said as well, it's about which teams are people picking on FIFA. For example, when I started to get interested in basketball when I was a young kid and I picked up NBA and I found the Phoenix Suns, they had Amare Stoudemire, they had Steve Nash, they had some great players. And that was it. I just started kind of following the Phoenix Suns. That's how it happens sometimes, especially internationally. If we really want to press forward in the US, I think we've just signed an American wonder kid, right? 15 years old, 16 years old. If we can get a world-class American in this side, that's when you really start to take the country by storm. And we also benefit from, quite frankly, the poor, poor quality of the MLS. I don't know if you saw that goal that went in Chicago the other day, where it was defenders.
Adam Booker is seething at his.
But he's not because Booker. I know Booker enjoys his MLS, but I think he is fully aware of the existing standard of it. But it's true, right? If the kids are watching MLS casually and going to the games during the day, which is hard for many of them anyway, because the states are so goddamn big and you can be so far away from a team that they're going to flick on the TV and they're going to watch the favourite football team. And that's naturally going to be the best team, or the team that's got Erling Haaland in, or the team that's got the American wonder kid in, if this kid makes it. That's huge, right? That the influence of heroes on children, footballing heroes for children. And then it starts to grow, and there's always a lapse. You know, I think no matter what we do from here, in 5 to 10 years' time, we will be huge, even if we have a few down years, because the kids now that are growing up watching City, they'll become 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. They'll travel the world, and their first stop is going to be the Etihad Stadium. Their first stop or second stop will be the club shop. Not to start that discourse again about tourists spending money at the Etihad, but this is the point, and this is how it grows. Teams rise and fall, always around success. Leeds have a good international following because of their success back in the 80s and 90s, even going back again 70s. Liverpool's success, a lot of that comes from the Shankly era, especially the influence it had in Ireland. And countries that don't have top elite standard domestic leagues tend to look towards the Premier League, or La Liga, as I mentioned, Norway, Ireland, and the US will be next. So yeah, the exposure that we're getting is absolutely unbelievable. And I think we are, no matter what happens over the next 2-3 years, because of the demographic lapse, I think City are set for an absolute explosion in global popularity.
I think you make a good point there on the sort of the timescale of it and how long it'll take. Like, I think we aren't even seeing now, like, the benefits of this.
If you think
that we've got, like, a generation of Manchester United fans based on X number of years of Fergie's United doing it and, like, the treble they won, and that's led to people like our age now, like, across the globe being mostly Manchester United fans and stuff like that. Like, I think City's not a lot is made of City's success sort of coinciding perfectly with the meteoric rise and, like, normalization of social media. Like, I think the fact that we've timed our mad success perfectly with things like Twitter and Instagram and TikTok becoming, like, the absolute
like United did with Sky
up.
Like Man United did with, yeah, Sky. Theirs exactly. Was timed very well with the globalization of
the Premier League,
yeah, of broadcasting, yeah, in, yeah, particular, yeah,
exactly, yeah. So we've done that with social media and that will have, and well, and obviously, like, you know, things like FIFA and stuff like that, but this will have dividends for us in 10, like 5-10 years time. I say the good times could have gone by the time it benefits us, but they'll still be there because there'll be fans just purely off the back of that they've been following us since 2015, 2014, 2016, whenever Pep arrived. Yeah. So it's quite interesting to think of how it could look in 10, 15 years time. We could be, like, you know, people traveling from Far East Asia to come to a City game for, like, against Bournemouth, like they do for United. That could be the norm for us in, like, 5-10 years time, and we just don't know it yet.
The last point I want to make, it's very anecdotal, but it's quite nice, and I think it really vindicates what we've just been saying. When I went away a couple of months back to Tenerife, and I saw more City shirts, people wearing City shirts, adults and kids alike, than any other Premier League shirt when I was there. And for somebody that used to go away abroad as a kid wearing City shirts, and sometimes people didn't even know what the badge was, that's quite incredible to see. There was one kid in particular, he was wearing a Doku shirt. Playing five-a-side. There was a five-a-side game on at the hotel. And this guy was maybe 15, 16. He was wearing a Doku shirt. And I said to him, "Oh, you're Belgian?" He said no, and it was, by the way, that horrible Lightning shirt, awful. But again, you know, they appeal to further afield than Manchester. I said, "Are you Belgian?" He said, no, I'm Swedish." I said, "Why Doku?" He said, "I just like him." And I said, he says to me, "Are you a City fan?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "How long have you been a City fan?" And that fucking blew my mind. Because for us, it's normal that we're City fans because we're born City fans and we're from Manchester, but that's not the reality now. The reality for this new generation is that they are picking up the support of City, whether it's because of players, because of Pep, because of the success. And for them, that's a very normal question to ask. How long have you been a City fan? When did you adopt the club? So listen, there are a million one debates and conversations to be had around how good is that for us as local fans that are the ones having to stump up for tickets and shirts, etc. Different conversation. But in terms of City's global popularity, it's statistical. You can see it in the revenues, you can see it in Google searches, all of that. And it's anecdotal. You go away now into Europe or further afield, you will see more City shirts than you ever have before. And that is only going to grow. It's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of to piggyback on that point, when you go away, specifically in continental Europe and sort of seaside resorts and stuff like this, where they have, for anyone who hasn't done this is going to sound dead crass, but like fake shirts in sort of local shops and like touristy tack, basically, you know, the usual stuff. But they have football shirts, and typically it's been Inter Milan, it's been Man United, it's been Arsenal, Liverpool, you know, Real Madrid, Barcelona. And now suddenly there's Haaland shirts there, there's Grealish shirts there, there's Kevin De Bruyne shirts there, which is another illustration, isn't it? And maybe another topic of conversation for the next Coffee Corner will be, how do you balance that growth alongside maintaining the local sort of supporter aspect to it? I think, you know, all three of us could probably have some strong opinions on that. But yeah, certainly positive from that sense, and I do agree it'll be a generational shift, not an overnight one. But chaps, I think that'll that'll do for today's coffee corner. I'll invoice you the bills and hopefully we can split it evenly, going Dutch and all that. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. I certainly have. Listeners, if you want to be featured on a future Coffee Corner episode, make sure you send us your questions at City Report Podcast on social media as usual. But until then, it's been a wonderful pleasure. This has been the City Report Podcast. Until next time, we'll see you later. Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.